Hey friends, it's time for coffee, and I'm your host, Jeanette. I'm so glad that you're here today, and I hope you know by just pressing play on that podcast app, you have a friend with you. My hope is that as you listen, you will know that you are heard, valued, loved, and not alone, no matter what stage of life you're in. If you haven't already, would you take a second to subscribe to this podcast? That means every Monday when a new podcast comes out, it'll just show up in your queue, ready to listen to. It also helps Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and everywhere else know that you like the show and it'll recommend it to others. And if you really want to help us out, you could leave a rating or review. Reviews are life to podcasts, and yours would mean the world to me.
Hey, friend. I'm so glad you're here. Today's conversation is with my friend Danielle Bayer-Jackson. Danielle is an incredible woman, and I'm so thankful that she took the time to sit down with me to discuss racial injustice. Right now, the world is feeling really heavy, and the conversations around race, writing, and racism are rampant. As a white woman with a black daughter, my heart has just been heavy. I DM'd Danielle and asked if we could talk. Two friends, one white, one black, and just chat about how I can learn to be a better friend, how I can learn to lean into hard conversations, and how we can learn from one another's experiences. This conversation is very unedited, and I wanted to leave it as raw as possible. You are getting a real life conversation, two friends talking about really hard things. So friend, grab your cup, fill it up with whatever you want, and let's dive in. Hey y'all, I am here with my friend Danielle Jackson, and we are in this series called It's Time for Change. And man, it is time for change, Danielle, and I'm already weepy. Like I can't, I probably will not be able to get through most of this conversation without crying. And that's, I feel like it's, I mean, it's normal for me, but it's perfectly fine. This is a heavy time. So Danielle, hey, how are you, my friend?
I'm okay considering, but I am so glad you pulled me in to have a conversation. I think that's really important.
I'm so thankful that you are willing to do this. So first of all, do you have a cup? What's in your cup?
Coffee is in my cup. I need to go and grab it, but coffee, as always, is in my cup.
That is, I like almost waited to make this cup because I was like, I don't need a third cup for this conversation. So my cup is a little bit cold, but it is coffee as well. Tell us about you, who you are, and kind of what you do first, and then we're gonna jump into this to this conversation.
Sure. So I'm Danielle Bayer-Jackson, and I am a publicist by day and a friendship coach by night. And it's always so funny because if I do tell somebody that I do friendship coaching, you know, a lot of times the response is like, oh, that's cute. We don't know what to make of that. Like, what does that even mean? Is that a thing? But I am here to say it is a thing. And the reason I got into it is because when I was teaching high school students, I always heard the drama between young girls between classes where they'd want to talk to me after school. And when I got out of the education system, I just dismissed it as like a young people's thing. And then when I got into public relations, when I'd be having one-on-one conversations with some of my clients, then it would come up. They'd talk about how they're so ambitious, so they don't have female friends. And I thought, oh my God, like this friendship thing is, it never stops. So that's when I started delving really deeply into like, what does this mean? What's the research? How does that impact us? And created something called Give It a Rest Movement to help us put to rest our stereotypes about female friendship, our misconceptions. And so I think it's so interesting in a time like now when so many friendships are trying to figure out, do we talk about what's going on? Do we not talk about what's going on? It's a sensitive subject in interracial friendships and black friendships. Sadly, it's not new to us. You know, I think it's interesting that, you know, me and another black female can just be like, girl. And she's like, I know. And it said so much because we've done this before. And then among, you know, predominantly white circles, you can't help but to not talk about it right now. So it's kind of interesting to see conversations emerge at the intersection of friendship and race. And that's why I appreciate invitations like this to come on and to talk about that.
Yeah. And you and I both, like you said, you are a friendship coach. I just love friends. I just love having friends and being a friend. And so when I DM'd you, I think I was probably sitting here. I had just finished an interview. I think I'd like jumped on social media. I was scrolling and just like the reality of what's happening in our world is devastating. And I think I even said like in the DM, like, Danielle, as a white person right now, like
I realize my privilege in even saying, like, will you sit down and talk to me about this? Because I don't know what it is like. So, I'm just thankful for you and for your friendship, because you came alongside me with the book club, and now you're coming alongside me in a way that you don't have to. And I'm so honored that you are.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here tonight. Don't apologize. You know, let me say this, okay? And I did a little episode on this today for the Give It a Rest podcast, but it's tough, because I'm going to start by saying, yeah. I'm going to acknowledge the listeners right now, okay? Thanks. I know that there are white women listening. I know there are women of color who are listening, and both sides are waiting to hear their sentiments validated and waiting to hear us say something like, oh, yes, exactly. Okay. But it would be a false conversation if we try to cater to one or the other and make sure, okay, well, let me say this for them so they know we're representing them. If you say the truth, it's just the truth. I was fearful to do the episode I did, to be, you know, totally honest, because I thought, okay, if I say certain things, are my black friends going to be like, girl, you watered that down. It was not radical enough. Would some of my white friends be like, ooh, that was too intense. Like, you're calling us out. And I can't care. Now, hopefully they know my heart and they know I care very much. But if I just honestly stay rooted in what does God have to say, that makes everybody uncomfortable. Sometimes it makes me uncomfortable. So even seeing you, you know, be emotional at the subject, just as a friend, strip away the racial context. As a friend, if your friend is hurting, your job is to listen, empathize, prompt, ask questions. But sometimes when it comes to race, we just see somebody crying and we're like, okay, so, you know, what, do you want my sympathy? Or, oh, is that guilty tears? Or, and I don't know, all those things might be true. All I know is if we've established we're friends and I see you emotional, my job is to respond to that. And that's just the basics.
Yeah. So we are here to talk about this because you and I have talked before about, I think when we first initially started talking was when I was, in Zoe's hair salon and she's getting her hair done. And it is one of my favorite things to do is to go in, and she is loved on so well by these black women. And it is a part of culture. Like, this is something that, we have gotten to be a part of since she came home from Africa. And initially we had this amazing African woman. She would come in and braid Zoe's hair in our home. And then we moved to the sister locks, which I cannot speak highly enough of. This is my favorite thing that she gets done. But we get to go in. I get to go in and I get to sit with these women and we just get to talk. And one of the initial times that we were in there was when a lot of the stuff in Charleston was going down, and I'm able to be on my phone. They cannot, because they're doing her hair. And I'm like, so apparently the KKK is still a thing. And they're like, uh-huh. I'm like, okay. And I mean, we were seriously in the salon for 26 hours for her initial locking. So I got to sit with them during that whole weekend and just hear their hearts and just kind of sit. It was a very uncomfortable situation because I'm like, I didn't know this was still a thing, but it is. And now we're seeing our friends of color and our black friends hurt in such a way that all I can say is like, okay, we acknowledge that we have to do better. So the only thing I can do is say like, how can we be better? How can we do better? And some of the questions I sent you initially were like, I just want to sit down and talk to you. How can I be a better friend right now?
So, okay. I mean, you know, let me say this. And I swear to people listening, I swear that normally I'm much more eloquent and I get things out there, but it's just, you know, such a thing where you're like, do I measure my words? Do I not? So just talking to you as a friend, you know, and I've received several, you know, text messages, DMs from friends with the same question. I even joked to my husband. I said, oh my God, I didn't really realize is my target demo white women?
Am I thinking only these white girls?
So we like, you know, had a laugh about that. But, you know, I'm going to lead with, I'm not an expert on race relations and I don't speak for everybody. And I'm sure, you know, people listening, they know that. But sometimes I feel like, okay, well, let me just make sure I say that, get that out the way.
Well, and like you said before, like, not every black person has gathered to say, this is what we are doing. This is what we
Right.
believe. This is the direction. It's not the same across the board. So I appreciate you.
Yeah, and I've you know, heard some people in my family say things, and I'm like, oh, okay, no, like that's not the way to go. And we're all advising our friends different ways, but I can speak for me, Danielle, and I know that I've talked to a lot of friends who feel the same way. So I'll just start there. Here's what's helpful to me. I'm going to talk about, like, in this climate, what can I do? Okay. I appreciate when people reach out to be like, hey, I see you. I'm here for you. I know that some women of color may think, you know, well, that's it. A text message. Like, I'm going to need more than that. Okay. Again, I go back to the basis of friendship. I appreciate the message because that means I'm thinking of you. And even if I don't understand or agree with what's going on, you are my friend. So again, if it were any other context and I know there's some issue affecting you, I'd reach out. So why does it change once you slap a different context on it? No. So I appreciate when people are like, hey, you know, you good? Like, how's it going? Or I'm thinking of you. So this is kind of a specific, but maybe reaching out to women. I know a lot of listeners are doing that right now. Maybe don't end it with a question mark, end it with period. Cause sometimes I'll get questions that are like, how are you? And I feel rude because I don't respond for a while because I don't know how to respond to that.
Well, it's almost like going up to somebody who's grieving and being like, okay, what can I do for you right now? And it's like, well, I'm in shock. I don't actually know what you can do for me right now. I can barely take care of myself right now. So I even asking you that, I'm like, that's a terrible question to ask because I don't know.
No, that's such a great parallel. That's such a great parallel because we'd understand the norms that way. So just saying like, hey, I'm thinking of you and I'm here for you when you're, if you want to talk is a great starting point. Here's the second thing you can do. Because I know a lot of white people and people of color, honestly, are wrestling with hopelessness. Okay. You know, speaking very frankly, my husband and I, you know, we sat together and did, you know, a virtual sermon the other day. And, I had to pause because, and I think Christians should speak more plainly and stop acting, you know, holy all the time. And I think God appreciates when we communicate our real feelings, when we say, Lord, I'm mad, or I don't understand. I don't feel your love right now. I think he appreciates that. That's a real conversation. And we had to pause the sermon because I was like, I said, I feel like I can't even watch this right now because I'm scared that I almost feel hopeless, and I know that is wrong. I know that is not consistent with God's promises. I know that not feeling, you know, hopeful is denying his power, his promises to show up and, you know, to make things right. I feel hopeless. And then it scares me because when you start to feel hopeless, you do nothing. And those things go together. So for any, you know, white women who are like, I just feel like I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. As soon as you get comfortable with that being your daily affirmation, that is a problem. I mean, I just feel like there's nothing I can do. That is dangerous. Okay. And I'm speaking as a woman, as a friend to you who has felt the same thing on the other side. But as soon as I start to feel like, I mean, like, what can I do? Like, there's nothing we can do. As soon as I do that, I stop having conversations with my son. I stop reaching across the line to my white friends, and I start to become a part of the problem. So after you text your friend, hey, I'm here for you. Just throwing it out there. I acknowledge, I hear you. I see you. The next thing you need to do is start talking to your white friends, because a lot of us are starting to feel like, oh, thanks. But if you turn around and your husband makes a racist joke and you're like, babe, and you keep on watching your Netflix show, that is the problem. That's the problem, because that forms a direct line to the violence that we see on the news. And if you're like, oh, okay, well, that's extreme. No, no. The violence is happening because we see black people as less than. We do, collectively, as a country, even some black people. I've heard black people in my family say some things and I've said, that is not okay about our own people, because racism runs so deep. It's got us believing things against ourselves. That's how deep it is. Okay. So if you don't understand that, you silently okaying people's jokes about black people being inferior, then are you surprised when they act like black people are inferior? It goes together. You can draw a direct line. And I got this from a speaker, his name is Ibram X. Kendi. He said that woman, something Cooper, the woman who called the cops on the guy who was bird watching and was like, oh my God, African-American man. You have to directly draw a line, he said, from her to the police brutality that we saw, because it starts with her and those false calls and that fear. It starts there
It
and it
starts with
manifests
the
itself.
purse, like the purse, like
Right.
clutching. Like it starts, it's it, and that starts from generations ago. And that's something Jesse and I talked about, because Jesse was just kind of like, when we were adopting, we had friends who were in the adoption process of some children from Africa as well, and they were like, how do we talk to our boys about how they can't wear hoodies at night, like how they have to protect themselves? And Jesse was like, no, that's just feeding into this fear. And this was years ago. And so we were sitting on the couch today or the other day, and Jesse was like, I thought it was over. And he goes, now we have this girl who we have to say, like, not only does she have this, like, this deficit with hearing, but if a cop comes to her window, we have to teach her, like, first you make sure that they know that you are deaf. You are not ignoring, you know, like these steps, which is just, it sucks. But he said, it starts with our home. Like, he goes, from now on, there are no racist jokes. Like if our family members say something, you call it out. You call it what it is. And we've had those conversations, like, nah, you're really generalizing there. Like, come on. But it's calling a spade a spade, and that spade tends to run real hard racist. And it's like, that's so ugly. And you're right, it starts with the purse grabbing, and then it's a call, and then it's brutality. And that's a really quick line, but the fact is, we've seen it in a week.
Yeah, and I appreciate you sharing that and highlighting the growth in mindset of like, oh my gosh, like, whoa, I didn't see, but now I see. I appreciate you even sharing that because I really do wish more people were honest about that. As soon as people start to feel like, oh, I'm woke, I'm aware. Yeah, I understand all that stuff. No, you don't. None of us do. We should. It's a process. We should forever be fighting to understand, read more, have conversations. You're not there. You have not arrived, none of us. So I think as soon as we accept that it's a journey, and while some people are further than others in their understanding, you should all be moving. As soon as it's like, well, I feel hopeless, so I'm not going to move, or if it's, well, I totally get all that stuff, so I'm good, they're both wrong. And yeah, it starts with the purse grabbing and all that. I want to say, I want to say this too. I understand that there are some white people who are trying out their voice for the first time. They haven't spoken up before, and now they are. It's tempting for some of us of color to be like, girl, where have you been? Like, no, I'm not applauding you. Like, I've been going through this since I was born, and now you're speaking up. Oh, now it's all over social media. Now you want to speak up. It's hard for us to accept because we're like, where were you all the other times? But I do understand some of you are trying out your voice for the first time and getting comfortable speaking up. And I do want to acknowledge, okay, it pales in comparison to the bigger picture, but I want to acknowledge that there's risk and discomfort involved for you. You may have grown up in a house where people were saying racist things. I mean, I can't think of like a synonym. That is what it is, racist things. And now you realize, wait a second, I don't think that's okay. And now you're pushing back. I acknowledge that people speaking up, white people speaking up, is causing tension in some marriages. It's causing tension in some friendships. It's making you the outcast. It's got your friends texting you and pushing back. And I understand that it puts you in a tricky space too. I applaud it. I recognize it, and I encourage you to keep going. But yeah, there are, one example I have, is I have a friend of mine. I was introduced to her through my husband, and years ago we were just like talking about race, and she grew up like in a predominantly white city where there's not people of color. And I just said something quick to her about, man, when I have kids, I have to talk to him about this, this, and this. And I watched her face, and she was just like, huh. And then a couple months ago, we talked about something else, and I was like, yeah, I've got to talk to my kid about that. And she was like, wow, I guess, man, I never realized I don't have to even think those thoughts or talk to my kids. And I was like, yeah. And then we went on about our business and enjoyed our wine and kept moving on as friends. And I have seen her slowly start to ask questions, start to read things, start to post things. And it's just like, wow, it's a beautiful thing. And I think that can only happen if we acknowledge the fact that there is no one conversation you have with your friend, and now we all understand, and she gets it, and you get it, and now we're good. As soon as you have that expectation, you are going to be so disappointed, and you're going to leave so mad at her and resentful that she doesn't respect you, she's not listening. But if you're okay with it not having closure and being like, okay, all right, well, let's stop there. You gave me a lot to think about. That, in my opinion, is okay. It's knowing when to stop and then being hopeful that the conversation might be a years long thing, and that's fine.
Well, I think that that is true with the gospel, right? Like we plant seeds and we hope that relationally those seeds blossom into something fruitful. And I think that that's exactly like we have seen that within the adoptive community. Like okay, let's see, let okay, that's something to think about. Okay, and then you slowly are like, oh, now I have this perception of like, oh, this is actually like this is how. This is fruit bearing is kind of what I'm trying to think of. Because yeah, like we have two sweet little boys who are devastated by what the world looks like, and they actually have a 5th grade teacher who had them reading and talking a ton about racial injustice, and she got in trouble by one of the parents. Like one of the parents complained that they were reading too many books about racial injustice and that it wasn't okay. And she was like, come at me, bro.
Wow, yeah.
Like, come on. Like, no. And so the boys have read some incredible books and they have this amazing heart. But one of my biggest fears in all of this is that I am in some way raising oh, what's the word I'm looking for? White saviors. I don't want to be raising white saviors. Why can't I think of that word? So how I don't even know if you can like answer this, but like how can I be raising young men who are white, who have a black sister, where their job is always number one, protect your sister. Number two, stand up for those around you. What does that
Oh my
line
gosh,
look
that's
like?
such a good conversation. And I don't think enough people are having that conversation. I think, again, as her brothers, as her family, they better darn right be ready to stick up for her. And if she can't,
I mean, she'll handle business herself for
and I'm
sure,
sure she will. I'm
but
sure
we
she's
need to all
like,
have our back.
okay, that's enough. But it's good. They need to know that for anybody who is not able to advocate for themselves or who's being stomped on, it is my job. As a Christian, honestly, just as a person, it's my job if I have a voice to be like, that's not okay. That's my job. For anybody listening who doesn't understand the white savior thing, I know it's like, oh my God, all these terms, white privilege, white savior. It feels so like, it comes right at you. It feels, harsh and abrupt. I get that. But let's just explain it for a second. They're equally dangerous. If we have somebody who's like, oh, I do not like this group of people, or I think it's okay to make jokes about them, that's one level. But then for the people who are like, no, I'm going to stand up for them. Do you want me to speak for you? Let me speak for you and explain this to them. And silencing a black voice because you're going to speak up for them. Or a person who donates to, African children. And they're like, yeah, I mean, I donated to help those kids. What we don't realize is the problem remains the same, which is you don't see black people as equal. And I know if somebody's like, oh, God, you don't see them as equal. Because you see them as people who need your help. When I was a teacher, okay, just to like put it on a practical level, when I was a teacher, I saw some white teachers who allowed the black students to turn in, questions that were wrong, or they wouldn't mark points off for certain things because they didn't realize this, but they inherently believed that those kids were less intelligent. So they thought they were doing something good by not marking off every little thing because I want to help them. But does it help if you pass that kid up to the next grade and he doesn't have the skills yet, where another kid you would stop, you'd mark those questions wrong, and you'd put him in tutoring? So it's little things like that. If you saw me as equal, if you see these kids as equal, you don't feel like you're in a position to be the helper and they need saving. Before I went out and had my own business, I worked for a corporation and helped with their PR. And I was talking to a coworker because I noticed because the company was in the adoption business. And I noticed whenever we did marketing material or things like that, that whenever they showed an adoptive parent, they were white. And a kid, they were black. Or whenever they showed somebody fostering or helping or donating money or anything, they were white. And the kid was black or Hispanic. And so I went to the marketing department. She's like, hey, so instead of calling her out, I just said, I have some other images I think are like, oh, so powerful. What if we use these? And she was like, oh, okay. I mean, I feel like this doesn't really show like a foster kid, like a real foster kid, you know, because the kid was white in the picture. And I was like, a real foster kid, you know, so it's like perpetuating the idea of like, oh, that poor black kid, that poor Hispanic kid. But that doesn't help us either, of constantly showing us as needing help because I'm not smart enough. So can you help me? I'm so poor. Can you help me? That's detrimental too. So if there's anybody listening who's like, oof, I guess I do that. This is a great moment. This is a great moment that you're like, oh, snap, do I do that? Because that's when we start to correct ourselves. And you might do it again tomorrow after having just listened. But the responsibility or the duty you have is to catch yourself. If you're a purse clutcher and you're walking down the street and you notice that you're one of the people who kind of, your body gets a little tense, that's okay. I mean, that's not okay, but okay. Then the next step is, yeah, the next step is what are you going to do? Because your job is to be like, oh, shoot, okay, hold on. That's okay, that's not even right. That's your job. I've done it. If I'm keeping it real, like I've said and done some things, especially my anger, that are not okay. And my husband's been like, okay, babe. And I justify it as, but I'm fired up. I don't care. I'm fired. And he has to, that's not okay. That is my job. Even though my emotions are, oh, well, that's just, I mean, it's just natural. I can't help it. My job is to do the work to make it unnatural. So.
I love that. I love that so much. And I think that it's teaching our kids now, like, hey, all kids are on an equal playing field. So if you see somebody teasing this kid over here, you better stand up for them. But if they want to fight alongside you, you guys fight together. Like, you don't jump in front of it. Like, you go, you need to punch, you punch a kid, but make sure the other kid punches
exactly.
Too. Well, I'm sure that's like super legit parenting. Just everybody fight.
I like it. I like yourself.
We'll see. I have one kid who probably will. One kid probably won't. Zoe always will. Zoe will always go for the fight. Hey, I just want to break in real quick to tell you about something I'm so excited about. If you like this podcast, which you do because you're listening to it, you are going to love what I have coming up for you next. Blake, tell them.
Heyo, we are starting a podcast together.
Yes, we're starting a podcast. It's called Room at the Table. We're going to be talking all about life, business, podcasting, everything that we do behind the scenes together, we're bringing into the light for you. And we are so excited about it. We are two friends who should be in competition, but instead we hold hands and walk through everything together. So join us at Room at the Table.
There's always room at the table for you.
Like and subscribe because it's live June 15th. We're so excited. Episode 1 will drop then. You are not going to want to miss this podcast. I love what you're saying. I think it really does start with acknowledging it, because I think the roots of racism run so deep within us that we don't even realize it. And that's terrifying and it's sad. But I think because we've always been like, our generation isn't racist. We are. And it's like, no. We still are. They run deep. We're still pulling up those roots. Do I believe we can end it? Yeah, I really think we can. And I think that raising the next generation and that generation raising the next generation really, really can make some difference. But it's just that, you know, it's us acknowledging like, hey, I just did something and I shouldn't have done that. Like, I shouldn't have been fearful for a second. And I know as women, we kind of have that. I read something to my husband months ago about a woman having to be aware walking into the parking lot. Like through a parking lot. And he was like, do you check the backseat of your car before you get in? I was like, yeah. He's like, do you do something? Like, he asked me like a line of questions. I was like, yes, I'm a woman. I have to be aware of my, of Like, I can't be on my phone walking through a parking lot. Like, I need to be looking up and being aware. And he's like, I have never thought about that. And I was like, that's because you're a
white
man.
That is such a great parallel. I love it.
And he was like, you're right. I don't have to think. I don't have to be fearful of anything.
I'm yeah.
Like, and that's like, and I had to be fearful less, but I'm like, I still have to be aware. So I think all around, the biggest call to action that I have for our friends listening is awareness. And it's probably not enough, if I'm being honest, like just being aware, but also like, acknowledging it within our own homes. Like I said, that's something that we, have talked about is like, my goal as a friend and something I write down every single day is to be a good and safe friend. And that means I need to be a good and safe friend within my home. I need to be a good and safe friend on the internet. And that means, really starting in my own heart and starting with acknowledging those moments where I'm like, ooh, that was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. And acknowledging it within my own heart and then changing it outwardly. And I know that that's not a fast and easy solution. And it's not one that I can like always portray online. It's hard because I want to be like, we're changing. It's going to be great. But the fruit will show down the road.
Absolutely. I do. And you know, racism is a sin problem and sin's not going anywhere. However, it is our job. And if we find ourselves getting discouraged, like we zoom out and we take an aerial view and we just survey the damage and we're like, oh my God, there's so much. I'm so overwhelmed. Sometimes that will immobilize you because it's like, this is little old me. And look at all this devastation. Like, I mean, will it end? Like, honestly, like that's just the way the world is. It's the worst thing you can do. I encourage you to, you know, stay, you know, big picture when it comes to, you know, what we are called to do, you know, how God has promised that he will work this all in. He will, you know, he will work this all out. He will have the final say. So big picture view is that, but the little picture view might help you stop feeling overwhelmed in the day to day. The little picture is if I hear things today, I'm calling it out. The little picture is I'm going to be brave and I'm going to ask my friends questions. And hopefully we have a safe space where she doesn't call me stupid or roll her eyes because I don't know. So I'm going to ask her questions. This little zoom is, you know, today I'm going to read an article. I saw somebody share it. And you know what? Let me get my coffee. Let me settle in. Let me read this today. Those are the little things that actively make a change. But when we zoom out and see them, you know, the mayhem or like, oh, there's, I can't compete with all this. So, you know, stay focused on your day to day, reach out to your friends who, you know, are especially affected by what's going on. And then call out your white friends and then check yourself every time you have yourself, you know, responding to things in a way that you shouldn't, you know, and some of my friends, I'm so glad to see, you know, some of my white friends kind of waking up to things because, you know, like, for example, something as simple as, you know, that video of George Floyd circulating, you know, somebody brought up a point of like, man, have you noticed that if a white person is murdered, they're not going to show that on the news. It just feels like in bad taste. But there's something about those black images. We show the video and we circulate it. And I'm still kind of torn on that. A part of me is like, we need to see that so we can like be outraged. Then the other part is like, man, I don't. You know, does everybody have to see this? Why do we only show this one? And it's so interesting that the details of a memory tend to stick with us. So when I watch that video, I think like anybody with a brain or a pulse should be outraged. I don't, you know, and just to be honest, when people are like, oh, I just want you to know that I'm outraged. I'm like, yes. You know, so there's no points for like, I'm outraged too. Yes, that's crazy. But you know, what's been hard for me and a lot of other moms, okay, this weekend is when that man was being executed, he called out for his mom. Those were his last words, is saying, mom, please. And that's a grown man, but that is somebody's baby. And so for me, it's the little moments. I'll be fine. I'll be sending emails. And, you know, my son Elijah will say, mama. And I have a moment because that should not be my little boy's last words is calling out for your mom. And it's just crazy that we have this race is better than this race and just this foolishness. And that was somebody's baby. That is somebody's baby, you know, and I don't want to oversimplify it by saying we're all just human. That's oversimplifying this really complicated issue. But it's the little details like that that get me, you know, caught up, that disrupt my day. It's just things like that. I got a little discouraged this weekend as well because, and my friend, she put it so beautifully. She made a post the other day on Instagram, and it just showed a car seat. And, you know, she wrote a post that said, I got a little emotional today because it was time for us to get rid of the car seat. You know, it's helped us move two kids back and forth. We've traveled to Disney World in it. And as a mom, I was just like, oh my gosh, wow, both my kids outgrew the seat. This is emotional. And for any mom that's like, oh my God, what a milestone. My babies aren't babies. But there's still something that she's allowed to have, which is like, oh, I'm going to miss them being little, but oh, they're getting so big. That's so exciting. Then she wrote that, and then I realized that for Black moms, this moment is devastating. I was overwhelmed this weekend because I thought, oh my God, I'm going to have to do this again. I'm going to have to mourn this again. You know, my son's not even two, but when he gets five or four, when we're at a birthday party, if my son hits another kid, and this there's research on this, so if anybody's like, oh, are you sure you're being sensitive? Are you sure you're not? When my son hits another kid at four, he will be viewed as violent and aggressive. Parents will be kind of side-eyeing him like, oh, gosh, somebody get that kid. He's too rough. If Billy is four and hits another kid, it's, oh, my gosh, he's so rowdy. Or, no, no, Billy, stop. And we all move on. From when my kid is young, he is looked at through a lens of criminalization. And I think, and again, I'm not an expert, but I think the term is adultification, which means our kids don't even get to be kids. So when he's, you know, I'm going to have to mourn at five when, you know, you've got five-year-olds who are more likely to be suspended than, you know, white kids. Why? Because the teachers see them as violent. So they don't get to hit, they don't get to talk back. That's a referral. I saw it when I was teaching. You know, I saw the teachers give referrals to certain kids, but the other ones, they were like, okay, last warning. I was like, wait a second, they did the same thing. You know, so I'm scared for when he's five. I'm scared for when he's nine and somebody says something crazy to him at school because their parents said it at the dinner table and he comes home and I have to put joy back in him and remind him of his worth and keep a straight face and then go in the other room and cry. And when he's wondering, oh, am I that? I have to cry for him at 12 the first time a white girl says, I don't like Black boys. I have to cry for him again. I have to cry for him at 16 when the parents who were cool with him coming over at 3 years old are now uncomfortable with him dating their daughter because now suddenly something changed and ugh, I don't know about that. I have to cry for him at 18 and pray for him when he just gets in a car with kids to just be a kid and to blast his music and wear his hat backwards because that's what kids do. They're just kids. But I have to be fearful.
They're not allowed to be kids.
They're not allowed to be kids. So, you know, it's just – and then when he's 22 and he's taking a jog, you know, my husband, he jogs. And, you know, the other day he – well, a couple months ago actually, but he cut through somebody's – backyard to like get to where he was trying to go, and they're all open, like the backyards run together. And when he came back in the house, I didn't know whether to curse him out or to cry, and I told him, you can't do that. You can't run in those people's backyard. Do you understand all it takes is for somebody to walk out and shoot you and be like, oh my God, I thought, well, we didn't know, it looked like he was coming to our back door. We didn't know. We just saw this Black guy and we didn't know. Do you know that he can't cut through a backyard? He can't jog. I see some people saying, oh, well, maybe if you wear, you know, those reflective vests, then people will know you're jogging. That, you know, so there's just, it's just exhausting, but Jesus, you know what I mean? And I don't know. I can't protect my son and that makes me really scared. But Jesus can, and I have to rest in that.
Yeah. And I hate that for you. Like, honestly, I hate that you guys have to have those conversations. And I know that our conversations will be different too with our daughter, and our conversations with our boys will be different because of their friends, and because, you know, it's such a damning thing. It's hope is in Jesus, and hope is that someday when we get to all go to glory, this will not matter. But we live in a broken and fallen and divisive world. And the only thing I can think of right now is, as our world is at odds, and as I mean, like, from the freaking coronavirus to racism, I'm like, the one thing that has us all united is ununited. What is the word? I can't even think. It's divisiveness.
Yeah.
We're so divided. We're unified in our division. And it just breaks my heart, because I can only think of, like, the one thing the devil wants more is division.
That's right.
But then within the church, in our nation, and just like, oh my gosh, like, I just want to stand united with my people. I just want to stand and say, like, man, I'm praying for you. Like, I don't understand this fully. And there's a good chance I never will understand this fully. But my heart is for you, and it is with you, and it is to say, like, I'm putting an end to it where I can and where I will. And I feel like I hope that's enough. Like, I just want it to matter enough. And I don't know if I want it to matter enough because I'm white and I want to be like, I'm doing my part.
Right.
Or because I really feel like my heart is broke.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So this is one of these questions, and this might be one where you're like, Janet, how do we educate ourselves so that we're not putting it on our friends? Because I know, like, even when I text you, I'm like, I don't even know if you want to have this conversation. I don't even know if I'm allowed to ask you to have this conversation. But, like, how do we do our own research so that we're not constantly saying, man, you're hurting, teach me more?
Right, right. Well, I understand, like, basic sociology and logic, especially for anybody who's, like, in a predominantly white circle, and then, like, you know, a person of color, and so your brain connects, oh my gosh, how must she be feeling? I want to help. Let me go ask her how I can help. I get on a surface level how your brain even makes that connection. Like, let me go ask somebody I know. Let me go to a trusted source, like somebody I have coffee with. I totally get how your brain goes there. Just something we're asking people to be mindful of is, you know, how many times does she get that question today? How can I help you? How can I help? And it's like, how do I even begin? How do I even begin? So, you know, the first thing is asking yourself, am I unknowingly giving this person more labor to do? Because now I'm like, can you teach me, walk me through what I'm supposed to do and say? So it actually tasks somebody with the mental labor of walking through the right steps. Here's the script. Here's the this, here's the that. So I understand that a lot of, you know, Black people are like, oh my God, okay, I'm not your educator, and are frustrated. I have pled with friends who feel that way to be patient, even though we feel like I'm not going to be patient, I'm over it, okay? To be patient and to see this person's my friend, and to be like, I understand. Here are some things that you can go do, like, as in read, research, and kind of, you know, push them alongside. So to that question, two resources I'll give to listeners is, one, you know, I think we get very, like, you know, academic sometimes when it comes to this stuff, and we're like, I need to be learning. And that is important too. I'm going to start with a movie. There's a great movie called The Hate U Give. And I think they do such a great job of addressing all sides and the complications, which is hard to do well. You should be watching The Hate U Give for sure. I think you should.
Did you read that book?
I did, and which is interesting because it's like a young adult book, and then the movie was like, oh, shoot. But it does have, you know, a good balance of humor, and then making things accessible. For sure, watch the movie because it's another level to see it. The next thing I would say you should watch and have conversations about is the documentary called 13th, which is on Netflix, and it's talking about just so many things. But if you're like, what can I do? I need you to watch The Hate U Give. I need you to watch a documentary called 13th and just sit on it. I'm not saying, like, go watch it and now go sign up for your, you know, nearest NAACP chapter. I don't know. Just watch it and sit with it. Talk to your husband. Talk to your kids. Okay. There's a book called How to Be an Anti-Racist. And I'll be honest, when I heard the title, I was like, oh, shoot. Okay. This is going to be some, like, heck yeah. Like, you know, go get them stuff, which I'm like, I'm for. But it is not what you think. And without spoilers, you know, yes, it's written by, you know, a black man who's a professor and academic, but it is not what you think. It called me out on some things. It called us all out on some things. But he's talking about how it's not enough to say, I don't like racism either. It is your responsibility to be actively against. And it's great. That's How to Be an Anti-Racist. And then finally, a book called White Fragility, which just sold out on Amazon because everybody's like going to get it. So if there's anybody who's like, oh, I feel like if I like read this stuff, I'm just going to feel bad and it's going to call me out. I got to say, sister, I need you to get over it. Some of them are going to surprise you because it calls out all of us. So some of them are going to surprise you, but please don't run from it because you're scared that, oh, I'm just going to be feeling bad about myself. I'm just going to feel hopeless. Please don't do that. Please don't do that. So that's like saying, you know, I don't know if I even want to read the Bible because it's going to keep calling me out on like all my sins and it makes me feel weird. I mean, like you'd be like, girl, well, it's going to be hard, but you need to hear the truth. It's the same concept. I am not, you know, drawing a parallel between the Bible and any other, you know, resource, but it would be the same logic. Oh, I think it's going to call me out. So I don't want to read it. Okay.
Well, it's like saying, I'm not going to go to church until I stop sinning.
There you go.
That's so stupid.
Yeah.
Like, get in it and learn and grow. I just downloaded the book Be the Bridge.
Okay.
By Latasha Martin. Yeah. I love what they're doing at Be the Bridge. And I downloaded I'm Still Here.
Who wrote that one?
Austin Channing.
Okay. And so are you like downloading those on like Audible? And let me say this, you know, because I
did one on Audible.
Okay.
I want to make sure I have the right name. I did one on Audible and I downloaded one on my Kindle because everything sold out.
Yeah.
I'm Still Here, Black Dignity in a World for Whiteness, Austin Channing Brown. So I downloaded that one for Audible.
Awesome.
And I'll listen to that one and then Be the Bridge of Tasha Morrison. I'll read in my Kindle. So those are the ones that I'm digging into. The Hate U Give is a phenomenal book. Mm-hmm. We haven't watched the movie yet. We've been the same teacher I told you about who got in trouble for all of her radical teaching. Mm-hmm. We've been wanting to watch that with her, but we wanted to watch it while Zoe was at school because we didn't really want her to watch it with us. Because she's so precious and so sweet still that she's like, a long time ago, it used to be really bad.
Oh.
And I'm like, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So a man just got shot for running.
Yeah.
I don't know how to tell you that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Sweet girl. Yeah.
So we'll actually probably watch Hate U Give with the boys again. Soon, it's just time. We really want to watch. So, man, friend, I'm so thankful for you. I'm thankful for your willingness. I'm thankful for your openness, and really, I'm just thankful for you as a person. Like, you are a force to be reckoned with, and I'm honored to call you my friend.
I appreciate you. I appreciate you, and I'm glad for everybody who is listening, like anybody who just stopped and pressed play. I think we should applaud those things. I do. So I appreciate you, and I appreciate the invitation, and I encourage this to be one of many that people have with friends who look like you and with friends you don't. So thank you for the invitation and for diving into this with me.
Absolutely. One of the things I wanted just to point out really quickly was while our friends don't want to be the teachers sometimes, there are some phenomenal teachers online who can teach us about these things. And I would suggest too, like, if once we say, like, how are you? Then we go, like you said, read some things. Follow along, like, and not just to pepper your feed with some color, but, like, really, really dig into these teachers who are teaching out of a place of wisdom, experience, the Bible, all of these things. And that's kind of something I'm challenging myself to do. And I just want to encourage everybody to do the
thing. Can I make, one note. So yes, to what you just said, totally. Go and find these people who are like giving the information for free on Instagram. You can go save it, swipe it, share it. I also want to say, because I love that phrase you just said about, like, you're not just trying to, you know, pepper your feed. So you're like, let me go follow some people. I also want you to encourage you to do this, okay? I want you to think about your favorite interest, hobby, or pastime. Okay. So let's say you're obsessed with like finance and saving, or you really like to knit, or you like plants. I want you to go and follow Black people who love to knit, Black people who love plants, Black people who love saving. Because here's what I think is going to happen is, yes, 100%, you should be following brown voices who are talking about advocacy. You should also be following people who like the same things you do, who aren't white, because I don't want us to just be seen as, Danielle, what's your, you know, what's your opinion on race? I see some news channels, I'm not going to like call them out, but who specifically only bring on people of color when they want them to talk about race. I mean, like, we have this woman here, she's going to talk to us about race. But why not invite a woman of color when you're talking about the economy today? And she is an expert on the economy. Why not bring in a Black gardener who is a botanist? And she is going to talk to us about how to keep your plants alive. So going back to like seeing Black people as equal, we're all quick to be like, oh my God, of course I do. Of course I do. Okay, I want you to, and it might take work. So I understand you might have to dig because it's not in your immediate circle. Okay, cool. There's no shame in that. But start with like your top three interests. You love to read? Great. Go find an account by a Hispanic woman, a woman who's giving really funny reviews on the latest books. And don't just see it as that Black woman who has a great feed on books. It's just a great feed on books. That is what I would challenge you to do to start to normalize brown people in your circle.
I love that so much. And that's like, it's like a slap in the face, like, duh. But it's something that's not a duh.
Sure.
And that's actually like, I think I started following you because of books. So I want to like pat myself a little bit on the shoulder. Like, hey. But that's something like I'm absolutely going to do that. I'm going to do like the best way to do that is like dive into the hashtags and start like searching out hashtags of things that that's you good. Love and just really, really finding people that that don't look like you, that speak into your life in a hobby that you love.
Yeah, totally.
Easy peasy. So good. Danielle, you are the best. Tell people where they can find you and for all of their PR needs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or friendship coaching by night.
Yes, I know. So many things. It's like, Danielle, get it together. But I will say I'm on Instagram at Danielle Bayard Jackson. So that's Danielle B-A-Y-A-R-D Jackson. And also DanielleBayardJackson.com. So I love to run my mouth. I love to listen. I love to, you know, leave voicemails and DMs. I like how you leave little videos and DMs. I'm like, why don't people do this more? Like, it's so personal. So I hope to see everybody over there, and I hope to be talking with people and having conversation for months to come on race and plants and finance and knitting and books.
I'm so thankful for Danielle sharing her heart today. I'm hopeful that as friends, we can all rally around one another in the Black community, that we can extend love, grace, and friendship. Here are some things that I've been doing as I've learned. I started reading the book, Build a Bridge. I did what Danielle mentioned at the end, and I have followed Black women who share the same interests as me. I have made donations from It's Time for Coffee Productions to an organization that I trust, and I've made myself sit, listen, and learn, and I've had some really hard conversations. I would encourage you to do the same. Together, we can make sure our friends know that they are loved, valued, and never alone. Thanks so much for joining me for coffee today. I hope that we're already friends on social media, but if we aren't, come check me out. I'm at Jeanette Tapley on Instagram and at The Jeanette Tapley on Facebook. Everything you need to know about today's episode will be in the show notes at itstimeforcoffeepod.com. I hope you have a great week, and I can't wait for next week when it'll be time for coffee. Bye, friends!